We're rolling.
Rolling, rolling, rolling.
That's it.
Welcome to Mustard A&A's. I am Matt.
I am Richard.
And we discuss things in the entertainment industry. I like that. We're 5 seconds in and Richard's already making his cats yowl.
Sorry.
It's all right. That capture our interest. Movies, TV, DVDs, video games, a little bit of technology. We were off last week. Richard was on vacation and I didn't... If I'd have thought about it, I might have recorded one by myself.
Yep.
I don't know how... I can think of a couple amusing ways to do that would seem funny while I'm doing it. But probably about 2 days later, I think that wasn't near as cute as I thought it was. And we're a day later than normal because I could not get my schedule together yesterday.
Yeah, what was going on?
I'm emailing Richard. I'm like, okay, are we on for Sunday? Great. And then like a day later, okay, I'm busy Sunday morning. Can it be Sunday afternoon? Okay, great. And then I'm, oh, no, now Sunday is completely full. So either we got to be completely done by 8:30 in the morning or we'll have to do it Monday. Which is like, Monday evening's fine. And then I'm like, okay, well, now I'm all right. Now I have a window on Sunday. Richard didn't even bother responding to that one.
No, I got it too late. My emails, for whatever reason, were all day yesterday, no matter how I checked them using webmail or whatever. But my emails piled up for an entire day yesterday until I got them. So I basically got it late.
Basically, so. We were house hunting.
Oh.
So that's cool. That's an exciting... Yeah, when you're looking around and looking at the paperwork and saying, "Yeah, look, hey, my mortgage is about to double," that's good times. one of the things where my wife and I are looking at getting a house that's big enough for basically a family sized house, and we're looking at a dedicated TV room. Not so much because she wants a dedicated TV room; she doesn't want to have to deal with the TV really.
Yeah, I hear you.
She doesn't want to have to listen to it while she's cooking. Doesn't want, you know. And I on one hand, I absolutely can't blame her. On the other hand, it's kind of funny. So yeah. We're like evaluating rooms. Like, well, like this room won't work because I can't do the surround sound speakers right because you can't get this. You know, there's a door in the way of where the speaker has to go. It's kind of funny how that's now a consideration.
My mom, when I was visiting my mom in Arizona, she got some. They got some new TV, some Sony big screen. It's an LCD projector thing.
Rear projection.
Okay. But it's not really deep, but it's an enormous screen. Enormous. It's got to be like a 70-inch screen, maybe
really?
Bigger. It's the biggest thing I've ever seen, and it's just as crystal clear as you can possibly imagine.
That's awesome.
I don't know how much they spent on it, but I imagine it was many, 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 many thousands of dollars.
My problem is I've got this you know, five. It's not a super duper surround sound setup because you can spend a lot of money on audio,
yep.
You know. But it's like a $400 receiver and a decent set of speakers. But the speakers, the fronts are big.
Yeah,
they're probably it's probably like a foot by a foot and a half, and I've got them on stands.
Yep.
And trying to place those is actually fairly limiting. You know, it's almost like, well, we could go with one of those Bose setups, but God, it would kill me to buy a Bose speaker system because they're so overpriced.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on.
Well, they, you know, with their TV, I was talking to my mom, and they live half the year or part of the time up in Canada, and then they bounce back and forth a little bit, so they feel compelled to get cable for up there and cable for down here, and if they can, they shut it off, but then they want to, you know, have it when they show up there. Whatever. The final analysis is they're spending like over $300 a month on cable. Can you imagine that, spending $4,000 a year on cable? I mean, it's just like, and I guess if you want to spend the money, but my mom has never struck me as that much of a TV watcher, and even though I was down there, I think we watched like 2 hours of TV total. It was mostly like Netflix movies. You know, $400. They're spending like $12 a day on TV.
Wow.
Or $300. So it was like, you know, anyway, it was insane. So
wow.
I now, of course, since I don't spend anything on cable, it seems especially insane. But even when I was spending money on cable, I couldn't imagine that much. Anyway, moving on.
I have not seen any movies in the theater in a while, probably since we last spoke. It sounds like you did, though.
I did. I saw.
Let's hear it, Skippy.
The hell did we see?
Did you see Love Rain Over Me?
Oh, yeah, we saw Rain Over Me.
Rain Over Me.
The Adam Sandler, Don Cheadle thing.
Yeah.
So it was pretty good. It was, pretty much everything you hear about it is true. Adam Sandler is pretty good in it. In fact, as good as he will ever be in a movie. and I don't mean that negative. I mean, he was really good. He was moving. He was good. It's really Don Cheadle's movie. Don Cheadle is in basically every frame of the movie. And the only time you ever see Adam Sandler is when he's encountering Don Cheadle. But Don Cheadle's really, really good. And then there's parts of it that are just stupid, that they're like, oh, man, it just out of nowhere, this like weird court case at the end with this, all of a sudden, this sanctimonious judge played by Donald Sutherland or whatever. But, you know, you forgive it for that because a lot of the emotions in it seemed very honest and real and pretty good, you know? Mm-hmm. The director is this guy, the guy who wrote it and directed it is this Mike Binder guy who was the producer and the star of like my least favorite HBO series of all time. And that's saying a lot because this is worse than Arliss.
I like that you've thought this through.
Well, it's worse than Arliss. And Arliss is generally considered as worse than a piece of crap.
Everyone hates Arliss, but I liked it. I enjoyed Arliss.
So the worst one ever was called The Mind of the Married Man or something. And Mike Binder created this show. It was terrible, terrible.
I have a little anecdote about that.
What's the anecdote?
Would you like to hear it?
Of course.
All right. When I in 2001, as every so often I reference, I did this, what was for me, a mega vacation. I took a 3-week trip, drove down from Seattle down all the way down to San Diego, went to the San Diego Comic Con that year, drove up, spent a week in L.A. visiting some family, and then doing as many studio tours as I could because I had never done that before. And I attended a taping of Dennis Miller Live, which was unique for a couple of reasons. One, they taped it in the Price is Right studio. The Bob Barker studio where they tape the Price is Right.
Yep.
And that was trippy because they'd section off most of the seating and they'd use like 1/3 of the seats and they'd have black curtains so you really couldn't tell. And, you know, they did a brilliant job. But that was the guest that night was the guy, because he was pitching that series.
Oh, Mike Binder.
And it's one of those, when you try and attend a taping, you really hope you get a good guest.
Yeah.
The week before had been Robin Williams.
Yeah.
And you're like, who's the guest? Who's the guest? Who? Oh, man, whatever. It's like how Jon Stewart's always making fun of the audience when he says, like, Scarlett Johansson's in tomorrow. And it's like, and you people add book author you'd never heard.
I remember when Dennis Miller first came on and he had a relatively large studio audience and it was pretty clear at the time that, I mean, they were desperate to get audience members. So they would run down to, you know, down to Hollywood and Vine or Sunset and Vine and they would grab anybody they could, including clearly they were bussing homeless people in just to fill seats. And at various times, rather than being embarrassed by it, Dennis Miller used to cut the camera and go out and interview people in the audience, including, and I always remember distinctly this one time, it was like clearly a group of homeless people, including like two that had fallen asleep in the audience. And he was going out interviewing them, talking to them. And I just, at the time, I just couldn't help but feel really sad for his audience coordinator, because that's got to be the toughest job.
Yeah.
Locally here in Seattle, there's a, this afternoon TV show called Northwest Afternoon, and they're desperate for audience members.
And
so
it's like a local affairs show.
Yeah, it's well they'll have that horrible psychic Joy Brand or whatever her name is Joy something rather.
I don't know.
Anyway, just horrible and other little things, and then they'll talk about soap operas, and it's just an afternoon show, and it's obviously geared towards women, and there's nothing wrong with it, but it's really hard to get 60 people to show up in the afternoon. And they have to come up with this every day. So they have a standing offer. If you want to give a PSA or a plug, 15-second plug, you have to deliver 15 people to their audience. And I've done that maybe three times for nonprofits I work for, and each time I felt like I was selling my soul. And the last time we did it, oh, God, it was just so painful because they had that psychic on. Mind you, this is the psychic that ended up recently. She was the one that had been on the Montel Williams show, where that child that was...
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I'm about to explain. That child that was abducted and spent 4 years with that pervert in Ohio or wherever... And he ends up, they end up finding him because he abducted another person. Do you know what I'm talking about? That
vaguely.
Okay, well, it's like a huge case because this guy had abducted this one kid and abducted another kid. And the first kid had been written off. People assumed he had been murdered like 5 years ago. And there he was, this kid, and he got to go home to his parents again. But of course, his parents had been on the Montel Williams show like 4 years ago, where the psychic explained, yeah, your son's dead. I'm sorry to tell you that. And there's many other cases. She's just an awful, awful woman. Well, that's the woman I had to sit through for like an hour to get my little spiel about my cat show up. And last year, we did really careful analysis at my show to see how many people came because of this. And it was like 8 people, and I've decided, you know what, it's just not worth it anymore, so I'll never go on there again. Aww, anyway, so
it
I look
produces
at,
such fun stories.
So I had when I was doing that, I have empathy for the person who was working on it when you're telling that story, empathy for the person who did it for the Dennis Miller show, because the people who would call me up, they had such desperation in their voice to try and get me to get 15 people on their show. It's clearly like an intern, and clearly their entire job is to get humans to show up, and it's got to be hard.
But when I was there, I mean, they had figured out the correct audience size, and it was full, and I think there were standby people that didn't get in.
Yep.
And this is in the heyday of Dennis Miller Live, before 9/11, and he turned into the. And it's funny because he'll still go on the Daily Show. And you'll sort of see his progression.
Yeah.
Well, like, last year he'd go on and say, you know what, everyone thinks I'm a conservative, but I'm a pragmatist, and it's just this one thing. And this year, the last time he was on, like a month and a half ago, he was a jackass.
I know.
I mean, the time before that, I was like, okay, you've changed your beliefs, and you're entitled to that. And he still said some funny things. This time, he was actually mean.
Yeah, I felt bad because I used to so like him, and I can't tell how much of it is just the politics. I don't agree with them. They just seem mean, or is it the shtick? Because, you know, a certain kind of shtick gets old, and he's got a very specific shtick, but it was painful to me. And I think obviously it's a lot of it's politics. You know, I just don't agree with them, and it's hard to laugh because I don't find them funny.
Yeah. Let's,
moving on. Let's Stephen Colbert would say.
We could do some other movies we've seen and then do the news and then we'll swing back to your vacation analyses. I finally wasn't your DVD. I borrowed Tombstone.
Oh yeah.
Because we had talked about it a month or so ago about how it came out that Kurt Russell sort of shadow directed this movie.
Yeah, yeah.
And I realized I'd only seen it once and I'd been jonesing to see it again. So I borrowed it and I watched it and I enjoyed it. But it wasn't as good as I was hoping it would be or that I remembered it would be. Mm. It's got a horrendous ending.
Really?
It lies there like a steaming pile of dog poo. Because it's basically this tacked on happy ending where he goes and he meets Dana Delaney's character.
Mm.
And he's like, I don't know how we're going to survive, but you're the one I want to be with.
Well,
she's like, my family's wealthy, and then they start dancing around in the snow. It was the gayest thing.
Well, at least, that was the other thing I wanted. If I had more time in Arizona, I would have gone down to Tombstone, but I didn't. So.
But aside from that, a fun movie. I thought Val Kilmer was fantastic.
Well,
really enjoyed Val Kilmer's performance.
Speaking of Val Kilmer, you know, I mean, I've said many times that I just think he's the worst.
I know
most
you
obnoxious
hate him.
Actor. That said, the last two movies I've seen him in, which was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, and then I just watched Spartan, this movie he did last year, a David Mamet movie, and I like thoroughly enjoyed it, and he was the best part of it. And both of them, he did commentary tracks, and both of them, he is like thoroughly engaging, and it's like, holy crap, I'm going to have to start liking this guy. And I used to hate him. He would so, like some of these movies like The Saint and these other ones, he's so smug through the whole movie and so annoying and such a goofball.
Yeah, but
and
The
a
Saint
jerk.
Was horrible for many reasons.
I know, but I don't know. I just so much about him that I hated him. And all of a sudden now I find myself really legitimately liking him. And he clearly enjoyed himself on like Spartan and clearly liked being part of this project. And he seems self-effacing, cool. But not like overtly so. And it's like, damn, I'm going to have to start liking that guy again. And I'd heard he was good in Tombstone, and I remember seeing it, and I remember liking it, but I vaguely remembered him even being in it. You know, it's got to be better, you're talking about the ending, than Wyatt Earp, because if you're going to do a story...
I don't know if I've ever seen Wyatt Earp.
Well, if you're going to do a story about Wyatt Earp and the Tombstone and everything else, the big ending scene, I mean, the big fight finale, has got to be somewhere around the shootout, the OK Corral.
Which, pointedly, Tombstone put in the middle of the film.
Oh, is it in the middle in Tombstone?
Just
because it's in the middle of Wyatt Earp, too.
Maybe
it's
not
literally
the middle, but it's no later than two-thirds through.
Because Wyatt Earp is a three-hour movie, and it's at about hour 1:15. I mean, which stunned me, because every other movie, that's like the final thing. I didn't...
Okay, test. Go ahead and test yours.
Chaz Palminteri.
Okay, we're rolling. So we had a little audio glitch there, but go right ahead back with Tombstone and...
That was like an hour ago, bro.
I know. Technical difficulties.
Richard's foot.
It is a technical difficulty in of itself.
Yeah, Tombstone had all this fallout from the shootout. You know, now that so-and-so's gang was shot, now they're going to come back. And so there was a lot of that. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've really seen anything else movie-wise, you know, even including old ones. But you want to move on to the news, or did you see any?
No, I didn't really see anything.
Nothing you want to comment on?
No. Okay. I saw some DVDs, but they're all esoteric, weird left-wing, you know, foreign movies.
On to the news.
Sure.
Shia LaBeouf in Indiana Jones 4.
Well, they've been reporting that for a while.
Who cares?
I know.
Who cares? Oh, my God. Who cares?
Well, see, they haven't said what his role's going to be, but Jeffrey Wells was, like, going on and on about, was it Wells, I think, about how if he's going to be his son, he doesn't look anything like him. And it's like, what? Are you kidding me? Are you really spending
paragraph? I don't recall Wells said that, but...
Are you going paragraph after paragraph analyzing his European French features and how they don't work with... I mean, it seemed insane.
I literally could not care less.
Could care less as well.
I just find it funny. It was like a big deal in the internet rumor movie realm.
Yeah.
Spider-Man 3 tracking is like off the scale. It's going to do gigantic business. You know, and I'm going to see it, and I just don't care. I am so ready for this thing to come out so I don't have to see another Spider-Man 3 commercial again. Spider-Man trailer.
I haven't seen a single. I saw the last trailer I saw was several months ago.
I am so oversaturated right now.
Yep.
And I skip commercials. So yep. It's insane.
It's all news to me. I haven't seen any of it, but I'm looking forward to the movie.
I'm ready to duck out of the way of this marketing campaign, this behemoth. And just watch the friggin' thing.
Yeah, I hear you.
What else? Okay, so Grindhouse. It has now been in. It's now 2 weeks old. It has done squat.
Yeah, it tracked fairly well and did not even remotely perform those expectations. Did half of what they assumed it would do. And I was taught. You know, it's so funny. I've been in this kind of perpetual state of trying to convince our mutual friend Mark to go see the thing because he has no interest in it. And then I realized, as I was starting to do it, I started to realize how wrong their marketing campaign was, because their marketing campaign effectively convinced people like Mark to not see the movie. Because we're talking, I go, why do you want to see this? I do not want to see some stupid genre thing where it's like, you know, and he starts describing exactly what you shouldn't be thinking about with the movie. I mean, essentially, especially the Tarantino part, you should be going to see, they should have been marketing this just a Tarantino movie and might be a riff on some genre, but you don't need to know about that.
Well, there's a couple things going on where it's both Tarantino and Rodriguez so far up their own butts in terms of referencing movies that it's insane, but...
But that's the way every Tarantino movie's ever been.
And it's funny, because Wells just keeps beating that drum, and he's not the only one. A lot of people are pointing that out, and they're saying, you know, do something original. Just stop making all this referential
stuff. To me, that's fine. I'm just thinking of the marketing of it.
See,
Rousseau, our friend Mark, he left. He's going, man, I need to, like, know all about this genre to appreciate and understand this movie. I'm going, no, you don't. So I asked him, why aren't you seeing, what movie do you want to see? He said, well, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing Volver by, you know, that Pedro Almodovar movie. I go, so why are you interested in that? Well, I saw his last two movies, and I kind of liked them. And I go, so let's see, how many movies by Tarantino have you seen? Well, I've seen like two of them, and what'd you think of them? Oh, I really like them. So what about this one? Well, I don't want to see this one. So you've seen two movies by this director. You really liked them, yet you don't want to see this, yet you've seen two movies by another director, and it's entirely because they've convinced him that this movie is work. He needs to know about the grindhouse cinema to appreciate this.
I don't necessarily agree with that. But
clearly, no, that's what he's saying, and no, as we analyzed it. And when I described it, I said, listen, I don't know if you're aware of this. This movie you love so much, which was Reservoir Dogs, did you need to know that like 80% of that movie was ripped off directly from some very prominent Hong Kong action movies? It was? Really? Yes. Yeah, the whole thing of the three guys all pointing the guns at each other, the ear cutting off, straight from it. Did you need to know all the movies that Pulp Fiction was directly referenced from? He didn't realize that.
I'm not saying that's not the case with Mark, because clearly he told you, and it is.
Yeah.
But, and so that may be part of the marketing. I think it's a little more like, Tarantino or not, do I have any interest whatsoever in seeing a schlocky horror film? Now, because it's Tarantino, I'm interested, but not really. On the other hand, there's also my wife. There is no way in hell that I could even drag her to it. You know, if I said, you must go, if I absolutely made her, she would. But she clearly would hate it, wouldn't enjoy it, and wouldn't make my life hell.
I understand that.
It's not just that. It's if I'm a normal person, if I'm my wife, if I'm a normal person, and I have no interest in a schlocky horror film, regardless of the genre, regardless of Tarantino and Rodriguez, and I certainly don't have any interest in a 3-hour-plus version where I got to sit through 3 hours of that.
Well, my point in the marketing was that it should have never occurred to them to let people know that it's a schlocky horror thing. It should have been entirely, like when I went to see Kill Bill, honestly, I had no clue what it was about.
Yeah.
I had no idea that it was clearly a riff on 70s martial arts movies and a little bit some other stuff. None whatsoever. And since I'm doing that, it had no impact on my enjoyment of the movie because of the way he addressed it.
But that's how Tarantino and Rodriguez wanted to do it, because it was this whole... It was all part of a package.
I understand. All part of a piece. And I'm just saying, in retrospect, it was the wrong choice. The marketing was the wrong choice. I'm not saying the movie. I'm saying the marketing of it ended up being a bad choice.
And that may be, but no amount of marketing is getting my wife to be interested in seeing a 3-hour whatever.
Yeah, that's true.
And that affects my ability to see it, because if we can only get to a movie for such and such, I'm more likely to see Rain Over Me, which she's interested in and I'm interested in.
And my suspicion is when they were pitching that movie to Harvey Weinstein, they said, oh, we'll do like 2 60-minute movies. And they just got bigger and bigger, and they have bigger balls than Harvey Weinstein these days. And they said, nope, it's got to be, you know, we just can't cut these things. And therefore, they end up with a 3-hour thing. If this is an action movie and everything else, you are not going to win that argument. And I have a feeling they just thought, by the sheer power of our personalities, we're going to convince the American public to watch this. And it's like, no.
But on
not.
The other hand, it's amazing to me, because this seems aimed at teenagers.
Yeah.
I don't understand why more teenagers didn't see it, quite honestly. I don't.
Probably because I thought it was too intelligent for them, or it's just too freaking long. I mean, there was a point when going...
That could be it.
I may be interested in seeing this movie, but you're going, damn, I've got to get there at, I mean, it's like a different time and there's only one showing a night. I mean, I just think it might've just been just too long. I mean, there's only one showing a night. It's like Titanic.
A lot of
teenagers saw Titanic.
One of the other meta stories about this film was, and this was Welles's, I'm blanking on the phrase I want to use, but, he fixated on this, and that's any interview that had to do with Robert Rodriguez that didn't mention the fact that Robert Rodriguez screwed around with Rose McGowan and his wife found out and his wife asked for a divorce.
Yep.
And so Well said, any interview that didn't mention that was just a BS interview.
Yep. Well, a lot of them didn't do it, and it's pretty clear they, as part of the agreement of doing the interview, they told them you were not to mention this. But it's like, that's like the story coming out of this. I mean, they shut down the production on the movie for a month while they dealt with this whole thing. It was a month. They shut down and given the way Rodriguez works, that's a big deal because, you know, he has these small crews and everything. So in other movies, you can sort of work around that. Not in his case. I mean, they just shut everything down for an entire month. What a dummy. What a dummy. I like Rodriguez a lot, but that was just...
I mean, yes, he's a dummy, but she's hot.
I don't know.
That's a horrible reason, but...
She just strikes me as a harpy.
It's a dummy move that a lot of people make.
Yeah.
And that doesn't justify it. That doesn't make it right. But it just said, he's no better than, any of the other men that have made that dumb decision.
Well, it doesn't help that his kid is in this movie, too. And I'm thinking... Damn, so he probably was kind of doing this in front of his kid a little bit, you know.
I don't know about that. What else do we got here? This week in media, I think it was, and they were talking about Blu-ray, HDVD, HD DVD, and everyone's pointing out that Casino Royale is, currently the best-selling Blu-ray disc. It's just sold...
By a factor of 1,000 to 1. I mean, you look at the numbers, and it's like, Casino Royale and the next one down is like 1,000th of the number.
Dude, you totally steal my thumb.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I apologize.
The point of them mentioning it, and the point of my mentioning it now, was that, yes, Casino Royale, I don't remember what the numbers are, but it sold a ton. Yep. But then, that's the number one on the list. Like, number 10 on the list literally sold 800.
Yep.
And so the drop off is gigantic, and it's this ongoing discussion of when's the volume going to pick up? Is it going to pick up or not? And a lot of people also saying that because of Casino Royale and pointing out that Sony's got this vast library, that Blu-ray is the winner. I've seen some Blu-ray is the winner zeitgeist floating around.
Oh yeah, just like. Just like their little, what was that ridiculous memory stick thing that they did with the PSPs?
Well, not just the PSPs, just memory stick in general.
But what's the name of that?
No, you're right, memory stick.
Yeah, okay, that's,
That is the name.
Yeah. Oh, that's been a huge success. They're the winner. That's really, really swamped the market with that format.
While I will join you in your derision, it's an apples to oranges comparison, though.
No, I know.
Because
I'm just saying Sony, because of their connection to the software market, all people that love to say, well, because they control both the software and the hardware, they don't seem to realize that's actually a negative.
No.
That's not a positive.
But that's not what this is, though. This is they have a vast catalog of content.
I know that they can.
Well, you're saying they control the software and the hardware.
I didn't mean it that way. I meant that people go, okay, because they do this, they can guarantee that there's a stream of stuff. And that argument's been out there so many other times before, and it hasn't meant diddle. It's when Sony don't forget the whole, the MP3 wars. Why did Sony screw that up? Because they wanted to have their own protected, a format and their own stuff, and it didn't mean diddle,
But that was different. That was a different case because they weren't saying... I don't know the vastness of the Sony. Does Sony have their own audio label?
Yeah, they Sony BMG.
Yeah, okay.
Biggest one in the world.
Honest to God, labels do so much merging and
whatnot. They bought Bertelsmann, and it was this German company, biggest in the world.
I should have remembered that. But if they had said, you know what, the only way you're getting this music now is if you get a memory stick or you buy a Sony MP3 player. But they weren't saying that. They weren't holding the content hostage to the format.
Yeah.
And that's not that they're necessarily saying you can't get a Casino Royale DVD, but they are saying you're not going to get Casino Royale on HD DVD.
Well, here's the thing.
That's what they're trying to do. I don't think people care enough.
It's clear that the only way people are buying the HD DVD or the Blu-ray, I'm sorry, the Blu-ray player, and they're not even speaking of HD DVD, the only way people are doing what's driving this is 99% Sony PlayStation buyers, which is great. Okay, here's the problem. Nobody's buying the Sony PlayStation. And even in the best case scenario, they're going to sell 5 million units, maybe 10 million in the U.S. Let's say they sell 10 million in the U.S. That ain't enough.
I have a problem with your numbers.
Okay, how many do you think they're going to sell? How many do you think they're going to sell?
I don't know, but I don't have any problem seeing them going over 10 million over time.
Okay, over time. So let's say over 2 years, let's say they follow the trajectory of the Xbox. Xbox did 10 million over 2 years, right?
360.
Xbox 360 over 2 years. Okay. So I
don't know exactly, but I'll see that
there.
To you.
Okay, so 10 million. I hate to say it, but 10 million isn't enough to create an industry.
No, you are correct. But I'm thinking more from the terms of PS2 numbers and the penetration they've gotten with that thing.
Yeah,
now,
but
obviously
PS2 is a machine that cost a whole lot less.
Obviously that is the difference.
Yeah.
So if the only way the PS3 gets that level of penetration is if the price drops to that level. And clearly it's going to be a long time for that to happen. So maybe when I look at it from that perspective, I'm way off base.
See, here's the problem.
I don't see them.
Here's the problem. Sony used to be the corporation that you always gave the benefit of the doubt. You're going, wow, this doesn't make sense, but oh my God, it is Sony. They're the ones who made the Walkman, the Trinitron. It's Sony. Of course it's going to be a success. Sony has screwed up so badly that now you're just assuming that they're going to screw up even further,
right,
even if it makes sense. So that's part of my problem, is I'm just assuming they're the anti-Apple these days.
Right. Their PR has been horrendous. How not to launch a console in 10 easy steps.
Yep.
I totally agree. But we'll start to see as gotta have it games start coming out for the system, because even now people are saying there's nothing that's there's no Halo 2 for PS3 right now. There's no Halo for PS3 driving this thing. People are saying if you're going to buy, Resistance Fall of Man is good. And Motorstorm, which came out like 2-3 weeks ago, is good.
Yep.
And then that's it. There's this game Flow, which is one like a Geometry Wars-esque type thing. And that's it. You're like, well, what else is there? Nothing.
But I spent $700 on my box.
Thank God. So, it'll be much easier to judge when we start getting some gotta-have-it games for the Sony and start comparing that. Because right now, there's no driving reason to get a PS3.
Yeah.
All right, let's move along.
Moving on.
My system lately has had a real problem recording daily shows, which has been very upsetting in my household.
Yeah.
But one of the ones we got was, actually, we saw this on YouTube or something before they had to pull it down. And that was Jon Stewart making fun of Nancy Grace.
Oh, that was good.
And I have, for some reason, I was almost totally oblivious to this wench.
Nancy Grace is a former prosecutor.
Right. I know who she is, and I'm aware that she has what I think is a nightly show on CNN, like an hour-long show.
Yeah, and it mostly focuses on justice issues. And because she has a lot of time to fill, she's your classic case of somebody who decide something, and in some cases right, but some cases is really wrong. And she famously, I know you hate it when I say that term, because if you haven't heard it, somehow it's not famous. But famously, she sat and berated this lady.
By definition, for something to be famous, I need to have heard of it.
Okay. Well, she berated the, famously in the non, you know, Matt
actually,
world.
In this instance, I have heard of it. So please.
Well,
use
she berated
the word.
This one lady who probably did like kill her kids, but sat there and berated her, and the lady like gets off the phone with and kind of Nancy totally snowballed her because she was going to talk about something else, but Nancy keeps pushing her, and she gets off the phone, pulls out a shotgun, and kills herself.
Right.
Okay. So now Nancy Grace for the last year has been this steady dumb drumbeat of those rapists.
The Duke lacrosse team rape case.
Exactly. And she is, you know, we've got the evidence. It's coming down the pike. So Stuart, go ahead and describe what Stuart did.
Well,
it was brilliant.
It's what the Daily
Classic
Show.
Daily
it's
Show.
It's what they do. They show you the videotape brilliantly. And they say, here's what she said a year ago. Here's what she said 9 months ago. Here's what she said 6 months ago. Here's her talking about how the DNA is going to nail these guys. Yep. Here's her the week later saying the DNA isn't important at all.
Yep.
Here's her saying that they're guilty. What happens when they're found not guilty? Oh, Nancy Grace is off tonight. Here, I'm the substitute host.
It was hilarious.
And it was him doing that for 5 minutes.
Oh, it was hilarious.
And it's so clearly, in classic Daily Show fashion, to ape your phrase right there, is brilliantly puts her in her place as a shrill, vacant,
just an awful woman.
Awful,
and
awful person.
It was great. And sometimes those have the effect of, like when he went on Crossfire, it actually has the effect of changing how they, it takes the Daily Show to point out how bad they are.
Well, yeah, but that was Stuart going on Crossfire.
I know, but I sometimes wonder watching this because it's so clear, and I wonder if like a higher up at CNN goes, oof, boy, he is right on the money.
And I used to watch CNN.
Yeah.
I used to watch headline news all the time. I used to watch, flip around CNN, what's going on. And I've been aware that they've been trending conservative because they're trying to chase the Fox ratings.
Yeah.
But then you see something like this Nancy Grace person, just right there, and you realize how far CNN has fallen.
And she's not necessarily conservative so much as she's just shrill.
An idiot.
Yeah, they have this guy on
there. A ratings whore.
Named Glenn Beck, who is like a super conservative. Yeah, they're all chasing after the wrong
thing.
And
now I clearly have almost no respect for CNN left.
I know.
I still go to CNN.com as like a reflex.
I know, they had that horrible shooting today. It's like, okay, let's go CNN and figure out about it. But
I need to switch to MSNBC because they're less shrill, but
that said, you heard that Kurt Vonnegut died, of course. And so there's this one website I go to that they tend to play clips of some of the worst excesses of Fox News. And they had the Kurt Vonnegut obituary from Fox News. And oof, it's awful. It's so mean. It's like they're calling him basically, he's an irrelevant boor loved by liberals, and now he's dead. And it was like, oh, it's so painful.
Since you bring it up, I think we're at a turning point with Fox News.
Yeah.
And what has done it has been they have tried to co-sponsor two Democratic presidential primary debates. The first was going to be in Nevada, and there was a lot of uproar in the liberal blogosphere, as I make air quotes, and I read a lot of the liberal blogosphere, and they said, you know what, the participants need to say no. I'm not going to participate in a debate with Fox News where
they're so clearly partisan.
Where 2 seconds after they'll show something from the convention floor or the debate, a minute later they will be making fun of Democrats.
Yep.
And the counter argument was, well, we need to appeal to people who watch Fox News. And the candidates were saying, you know what? No, we don't.
Yep.
Fox News is a propaganda arm of the Republican Party.
Absolutely.
We cannot pretend that they are fair and balanced.
They may try to convince themselves of the fact, but it's not true.
And so what happened was John Edwards led the way and said, I'm not participating. There's other debates. It's not like I'm keeping the people from enjoying a debate. I'm saying, no, I'm not going to give Fox News my name, my participation. And the other candidate said, you know what? Great idea. We're not either. That debate fails. Then they try and get one going with the Black Caucus, Congressional Black Caucus.
Yep.
That one lasted a little longer, but then in the space of 2 days, that fell apart. John Edwards pulls out, Hillary pulls out, Barack Obama pulls out, Bill Richardson pulls out. Suddenly,
and then it's Chris Dodd and a big empty room.
And they're saying why they're doing it. They're saying Fox News is propaganda, and we are done We are done with it.
Good for him.
And exactly. And so Fox is just incredibly shrill.
Because before
fashion.
Everybody's played along with the fact that they claim their news, and now they're going, you know, we're just not. It's so clearly not true.
And it's. I think that might have been one of the things that Miller and Stewart were talking about when Dennis Miller was a guest, saying it makes Democrats look weak that they can't face up to Fox News. And I'm screaming at the screen, no, you idiot. It makes them look strong for once, saying we're done playing your game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so tripping all over themselves now because they're finally being... It's finally more out in the open how ridiculous they are, and it will be really interesting to see what happens to them, because their ratings have been starting to slide, and because they're so closely tied in with the Republican Party, as the Republican Party is beaten down, and if you look at the national polls, they are beaten down right now, because Bush is so tight.
33%.
The party hates the public hates the war, and the president refuses to let go of the war.
Yep.
And Republicans are like, you know, they're saying, we're with you up until August, and if you haven't fixed it by then, we're abandoning you. And it'll be interesting to see how the party behaves when that happens.
It's going to be a very interesting year, and it feels so right as a liberal or a Democrat that I'm like kind of excited about it. But yeah, it's they're clearly imploding, and they don't know who to address.
Well, it's
and
because
what to
Bush
deal with.
Is. It's not just that he's incompetent.
Yeah.
As has been, you know, and almost everyone agrees. It's like polls have shown. What's the number one word you use? You know. When you think of George Bush, and incompetent is the top word.
Wow, I hadn't heard that.
It's not just that he's incompetent. Yep. It's not just that they can't carry out the policies they want to. It's that their policies are idiotic.
Yeah.
They are bad policies, and even if they were carried out properly, they would still be a disaster.
Yeah, and like you're saying, the real challenge for Republicans is how long do they cling to that before they realize it's going to start affecting them? And they
how
have
long
to start...
do the good Republicans
exactly
the Republicans that actually are Republicans because they have certain beliefs?
Yeah.
And it's not just that they want to beat up on gay people or that, you know, let's cut taxes.
Yeah, Arlen Specter or whomever, and how long can
I have
stick
friends
that
are Republicans, and it kills me because, you know, I when I think of them as Republicans, I think of them as, you know, Republicans because they have Republican beliefs, and they are not being represented by their administration right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, and so to tie it back to media, seeing what happens with Fox News, because they are so tied in, they are so intertwined with this administration and with the Republicans, as it disintegrates, what will happen to Fox News? So
it's really fun to be there and watch it while it happens.
Let's talk video games.
Video games. I pulled out my Xbox yesterday again, because I decided I need to. Even though, I followed a certain path with Test Drive Unlimited because I was trying to fill all those, you know, miles things, and then I realized you like passed me on the points, and I got to go beat you on the gamer points. So
because I was compared like a friend, baby.
Because I was trying to do all, I was trying to goddamn do all the miles, and in retrospect, realizing that's like going to take me 7 years to do. So because you can't quite figure everything out.
But what an uber achievement if you got all roads on Test Drive Unlimited. God. I would respect you.
I'm at 56%, which is a lot.
That's about what I am.
But
I'm not going any further because that was your copy I was using.
I know, but I realized there was like a couple achievements that you did, which I, while I was whiling away hour after hour, I wasn't building up any money or anything else. So you had, the two things you had more than me were you had like purchased all the Aston Martins or something, or like certain ones. And I kind of had given up on that. So I'm going to get down there and buy them to do it. And somehow your crackdown achievements are like five times higher than mine. I don't know what I was going for. I kind of got fixated on one thing on crackdown. So I didn't start building up achievements. I need to get back on there.
I was pretty balanced in how I was approaching that, but, right.
Well,
now,
and I never did any of the driving stuff. That's part of my problem.
I've done some of it. I need to do the high jump and the long jump. For some reason, I'm having trouble.
What's the high jump?
It's like 150 feet.
I haven't figured out how to. I haven't even done that.
You probably set up
a
ramp truck
and then
cliff.
Keep them up in the air. I have to start trying that.
I did that.
Too.
That one's actually not as hard as you might think.
Yeah.
So I did those. I need to. I've got 494 agility orbs. So I'm six away. I know where one of them is, and I can't get to it.
See, I don't I don't know how I have like 350 or something, but I don't even know where to, I mean, how do you, what if you're like, I mean, is there a way to tell where?
No.
So
well, crazy. There might, you know, if there might be a cheat that's coded in that points you towards the ones you haven't found, but
it
I haven't heard about it.
It tells you like the kind of, at least the neighborhood they're in.
There are maps out there of all, you know, of all 300 or 500 agility orbs and 300 hidden orbs. But of course you'd have to do them all sequentially or start going through them to make sure that you've got them all.
Well, at least if you have a map and it's by city, you can at least,
so,
you know,
but,
focus by,
you know,
region.
But with five or six left, it's, you're really like, where do I go? I feel like I've been everywhere. It's not like there's a section I haven't been to. There's this one, it's the bank building in Los Muertos, and I can see it. I just can't do the jump to the side and then get up.
Have you been hearing about these problems they've had with Guitar Hero?
I've heard the whammy bar.
Well, a
on
couple
one of
things.
The models.
Yeah, the whammy bar didn't work, and then they released a quick patch, which apparently bricks your Xbox 360.
I had heard that was maybe going on.
Well, I've been reading some reports, and it's hard to tell when you read these reports because you'll read like 25 people that are really ticked off, and it feels like more, and it might be the only 25
right.
people it happened to. By the same token, it's people are very excited about this game, and in retrospect, it's getting terrible reviews because of those problems and because their decision to charge an immense amount for downloading songs.
So to
the point that you're going to end up spending like $200 for the game to get all the content, which would have been free in a PS2 version.
Oh, I see. Well, there's a couple things going on here. That's like my favorite go-to phrase now.
Yep.
It's ridiculous. So Guitar Hero 2, which is a game where it comes with a guitar controller.
So it's already like priced $30 more than a regular game.
It's $90.
Yep.
Comes with a guitar controller, and then you play along with songs.
Which I want to do, because I'm a dork.
And then, you know, you start out with five songs, and then when you get four of those five good enough, it unlocks the next bunch,
yep.
and so on and so on and so on. And then through Xbox Live, you can also purchase additional song packs.
Yep.
There's three song packs to date that have been released,
yep.
and they're essentially $6 a piece.
Yep.
And people are saying, are you insane? That's incredibly expensive for what you're getting. We were hoping that the downloadable content, which would make this game awesome, because you essentially have an unending spigot of songs that could
yep.
keep this game fresh.
Yep.
And if you're pricing them at $6 for three songs, that's way out of line for what we were expecting.
They're also saying that the graphics, it's like a port from a PS2. They're saying there is nothing special with the graphics. For whatever reason, the game runs unbelievably hot, but it's literally as good as a PS2 graphics-wise,
well,
which surprised them.
The response to the downloadable content is, well, there's we have to license the songs, we have to do this, we have to do that, there's a lot of work, and we're trying to make some money at the same time.
Which I understand, but
I just wanted to get that out there.
Yeah.
Who knows what it actually costs songs
yeah.
versus, and, you know, get the versions and get the covers and code it up so there's different difficulty levels and blah, blah, blah. Now, I've played the game. I've got friends that have bought it, and they brought it over to another friend's house, and I was like, okay, I'll play it. It's much more interesting and fun than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, in terms
it's
of actually using
Dance Dance Revolution only cool.
So I was very surprised. I didn't think I would enjoy it, and I did. It was fun. Graphically, I didn't care because it's
well,
kind of like
some people said. It's
kind of
like
the Wii.
It does its purpose, but by the same token, it's like, God dang! I mean, they're clearly porting this over, and they're going to make a lot of money. Could they not put any energy into making it just, I mean, I agree. It doesn't really matter to a sense, and you're right. It's a lot like a Wii game where it's all about gameplay, but it is an Xbox 360. It is a good machine. Why not do that?
Well, and they're, you know, now they're talking about Guitar Hero 3, which actually was turned over to a different developer, so we'll see what happens there.
Hmm.
But I clearly the story with Guitar Hero 2 is the downloadable content. And people thinking, especially like the Penny Arcade guys, Gabe and Tycho, you know, we were really looking forward to this game because we thought there'd
be... Oh, what did they say? I didn't read what they said.
They're furious that the downloadable content is so expensive.
Yeah.
And he said, the reason we got this game again, because we already had it for the PS2, was because we thought that Live would function, like I said, as an unending spigot of songs.
Yeah.
And if this is how they're going to do
it,
were
they expecting it for free or just a lot cheaper?
I think a lot cheaper.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I agree with them on that. I totally agree. Because it's not, I mean, I don't know what their licensing agreement is, but this is not iTunes. You're not getting these to play in your stereo. It's for a specific thing. There's a limited number of times you're going to listen to it. You should not be paying, you know, three times of what you'd pay for the song for free in iTunes. It just doesn't make sense. But
the other thing going on with this is, why aren't the guitars wireless?
Yeah, what's up with that?
And it seems like...
You mean to tell me if I'm playing this, I have to...
Be about in the middle of your living room here.
Oh, really?
It's definitely not long enough to stretch
to where
you're
sitting. Do they have an extender cord?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Really? Oh, I had no idea.
And people say, oh, what's the
deal?
Well,
isn't that because Microsoft controls all the keys to the wireless stuff?
Something like that. But that's a weird argument, though, because there are...
Because other people have wanted to make stuff, but Microsoft somehow has locked that down.
There's something weird about that, though, because that's not right.
Can't you plug it into a controller, though?
Well, why can't... Well, to my mind, you know, I understand if you want to keep the experience pure, but then you give them the specs and say, if you can't meet these specs in terms of lag time or response time or battery life or whatever, then you don't get to sell it as a wireless.
For God's sakes, I can't play it in the middle of my living room. I mean, my screen is enormous. That's ridiculous. Oh, I'm glad you told me that. That kind of answers my question about buying this game.
The other day, when I was over at my friend's house, the worst thing that could happen happened. He's standing holding his guitar, and he like turns to talk to his wife or something, pulled the Xbox off of where it was standing. It tipped over, fell a foot, scratched the disc.
Oh, God.
Oh, and I felt so bad for him.
Ugh.
Fortunately, he said he was able to get another disc off of eBay.
That's it. I'm not buying it. I hate it. I'm turning my Xbox in.
Okay. The only other thing I had before we get back to your Arizona whatnot was I heard on the news today they extended the JOA for the time
they
the PI. This is JOA is called a joint operating agreement. And it allows multiple newspapers in one town to operate together. Usually they share business functions in a printing press, but have separate newsrooms.
And they started putting a lot of these came into place in the mid-80s when it was clear that these two newspaper towns were about to lose one of the newspapers. And in our particular case, it was to theoretically save the Post Intelligencer.
And there are very few... towns with more than one newspaper.
Exactly, and the few
people
that used to
realize.
Be there, like Denver and others, they've just lost them. San Francisco. So in our case, it's like, wow, we...
Isn't the Examiner still around?
Well, they are. It was bought by this other family, but it's barely in existence, and it's barely
it's
the same.
Yeah, that's kind of what I heard.
So in here, it's legitimately two newspapers that share it, one owned by the Hearst Corporation, and they're locked into getting 32% of the profits, the Times getting, you know... Whatever the 68%.
What's
60-40, I think.
What's interesting to me is that the Times is local. It's owned by a local family, the Blevin family.
51%.
Right, just enough. And owns the
Knight Ritter?
Knight Ritter owns the balance. So it's the Times is always called locally owned paper. The PI is owned by Hearst, you know, big conglomerate out of town, whatnot. And it kills. I like the PI better.
Yeah.
I like the Times website better, but I like the writing. And
yeah, but you see the new revamp of the PI site?
You know, I saw that on Sunday, and I
kind of like it. I like how it scales. Both of them, if you go across the country, we have two really good websites for newspapers.
I have to say, actually, I do like the Times. It's just that I think Blevin is a jackass.
He is.
I hate that guy. I hate the fact that it's a local family and it's him.
Oh,
why can't it be a good local family?
And not just that. The Blevin was the guy who... If we, you know, the whole elimination of the, quote, death tax, which used to be known as the estate tax, that was nationally almost entirely funded by Frank Blevin, the publisher of the Seattle Times. And so he's like a jerk. But anyway, so the end of the JOA, basically what they said was they came to an agreement So effectively, the current agreement extends through 2016.
Right.
So we've got another, however many years that is, 9 years.
That's
which
fantastic.
Is good. And then they've changed the money arrangements, and part of it means an immediate payment of like $32 million from, I think, the Times to the PI or one way or another. But it's this whole complex agreement. But all I know is it saves the two newspaper town and
because
our town.
Because the PI said that they would have pulled out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hearst would have pulled the PI out.
Yeah, and Hearst had no options because the Times owns the printing presses, and there's no other printing
right.
presses in our community.
Which I drive by just about every morning on my way to work.
Yeah. So anyway, I was pretty excited about that because it's like I value that. As a person who runs a nonprofit that's contingent upon getting press, let me tell you, it's a scary thought when you run a nonprofit and there's only one newspaper in town, because if that newspaper deems
right.
your industry unworthy of coverage, you don't get coverage. But if that, and I'll tell you, there's been many times when I've called up a reporter I know from the Times, and the minute I know I've got her is when she goes, "Hey, Richard, let me just interrupt you. Have you called the PI about this?"
Uh-huh.
And I know immediately, oh, I got her. She's going to cover this story. Well, the minute they're not out there, it doesn't really
exactly.
matter. So,
and the other thing is, as we've said many times in the past, newspapers do the bulk of actual reporting.
Yep.
Yeah, I guarantee. Watch the TV. Listen to the radio a lot, and less so with radio. But
yep.
mostly, what they're doing is they're reporting on the stories that were in that morning's
Absolutely.
Paper.
Absolutely.
So if you lose a newspaper, you're losing a lot of original reporting.
Yeah, I agree. We're really lucky in Seattle because it's not a huge city, but we support in one short fate, shape or another two newspapers, and in a dying industry
yeah.
like newspapers, that's a great thing. So anyway, so we were talking about Arizona. So I went to Arizona for a week, and a couple notes related to movies that I thought was, first of all, I enjoyed Cars, but and Cars was about basically the dying of Route 66 right. and the old things, and clearly so much of it, they must have taken a big, healthy road trip to the same area I was at in Arizona, which is this Winslow area, this and areas around there, because like the little teepee hotel,
right.
which apparently there's several of them, but clearly the one they based the one in the movie on was from there, and a lot of the countryside around there, and it was, and for whatever reason, it made that movie a whole lot more poignant to me to see the actual locations they filmed from and to see the actual pretty much dying towns. We drove through Winslow, Arizona, which is famous for the horrible eagle. I mean, the Great Eagle song. And they actually have a park there called the Standing on a Corner Park.
I've seen that in a magazine, and it's the creepiest, most pathetic thing. I feel really bad that that's what they could come up with.
It was actually kind of cute. But it's funny because they painted basically they created a little park, and there's not a whole lot going on in Winslow, Arizona. So they created a little park basically in a corner, there's a couple funny things about it. First of all, one thing is the building they painted the mural on next to it burned completely to the ground except for the wall that mural's on, and they're like propping the whole wall up, desperately trying to save this mural. But you look on the other side of the wall, and this whole huge ancient building is completely gutted with twisted beams and stuff. And the mural itself was clearly like seared, so it doesn't look quite right. But anyway, so you look through this whole park, and the whole, it's called Standing on a Corner, which is from Take It Easy, the Eagle song. And everywhere in the park, they refer to the famous song or the notable song, but nowhere in the world do you see the words Take It Easy, Eagles, Don Henley, Glenn Frey. You don't see any of that. Either somebody from the Eagles said, "Hey, great, you're doing that, but if you mention it to us, we're going to sue your ass or you pay us money," or they just got scared assuming that would happen because they don't mention song, the group, anywhere. But anyway, it was, and looking through there, they had like all the bricks that people had bought to pay for the city, and I could see, you know, this tiny little town that looked depressed. It was, it was like their one little claim to fame. But anyway, so right near there was the meteor crater where, and I had never been there before. And it was like, when I was there, I was thinking, wow, it looked, I was stunned by how for whatever reason, I pictured it as wide and shallow, and it actually was really deep. It looked very much like a half a circle, and this is where they filmed the finale of Starman.
Oh, did they?
Yeah, the whole point of the movie is he was going out because that's where this big circular marble globe reflective spaceship was going to pick him up, and so it was kind of cool seeing it in reality
Saw Starman when I was a kid. I barely remember it.
Well, you know, it's funny. There was another movie, which I'm trying to remember the name for it, and it came out like 2 years before Starman. And after it came out, the producers were going to the Starman producers going, dude, your movie is our movie. It was about space aliens, and they were coming, and they were, and their spaceship was ending up at, of all places, Meteor Crater, and it was a big giant... You know, a big giant reflective ball. It was the exact ending, and John Carpenter, and he was really serious. Says I had no idea. He had no connection. I'm thinking the person who should have clued him in on that is he clearly had to send a film crew out to Meteor Crater, and the people who run the for profit organization that owns Meteor Crater almost certainly should have said, you know, the ending of your movie, just like this other movie that was like 2 years ago.
I can see that not happening.
Oh, I can see it not happening, too, because they don't want to lose the people
in
there.
Well, not even that, but just not even occurring to them.
How many movies are filmed out there? There's two movies, and they're describing...
Well, yeah, but they wouldn't know it's the ending. They just know there was a movie crew there. Yeah,
that's true.
They would not. They may say, hey, there's a movie crew there, but they wouldn't know anything about the script or really anything about it, unless there was a movie dork on staff.
That's true. Now, so then we went out to the Grand Canyon, and there was... And let me tell you, every dork on the planet, I'm not going to call him too much of a dork because I'd probably do the same thing, but I literally counted 7 different people had to make the joking vacation reference from the movie Vacation, where they pull up, they put their arm around the shoulder of their loved one, their kid or whatever, and then they do a quick shoulder shrug and say, okay, time to go. Basically what they did in Vacation. Right. And I thought, I didn't realize that movie's over 20 years old. And I didn't realize how stuck in the mind it is of people. And pretty much every guy driving out there, they're thinking, can't wait to do that. Can't wait to make the reference. And honest to God, I was thinking the same thing. I just had nobody to do it with. You know,
I was out there last year. My wife's from Tucson. So yep. When we were visiting family, we did a whole, she had to show me all of her.
Did you go down to Tombstone at all? Because
no.
That's what prevented us, but it's not too far from you should next time you go down there.
And I don't think it occurred to me to do that, honestly, and I'm totally that idiot that would do it. But when I was, I didn't see anybody doing it. Although, for whatever reason...
7 people. I was there on probably the busiest day. It was like Easter.
We were, it was not that busy when we were there. I mean, there were people there. It's not like it was a ghost town, but not that busy. Thought I was going to say something. Oh, that kind of reminds me of the Onion article, Man Celebrates 10 Years of Quoting Fletch.
Yeah. Ooh. Another article hitting real close to home.
Real close to home. I haven't quoted Fletch in a while, all right? But I can. I can whip it out.
Oh, man. So, but anyway, I went down to Arizona, and I had not a whole lot of interest to go there. I had a great time, but it occurred to me the movies that used it as a backdrop. The one thing that I really wanted to do, I just didn't have the time, but the next time I go down there is to go to Monument Valley, which is in the very far upper northwest corner. That's where they filmed all those John Ford westerns, mm-hmm. like She Wore a Yellow Ribbon and Red River and everything. And of course, they're also stupid because Monument Valley, there's no water. It's complete desert. You couldn't grow a thing there if your life depended on it. It has one thing going for it. It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. But all these westerns take place in there, and it's like, who in their right mind would have a town in the middle of Monument Valley? It's clearly just a backdrop. But I've always wanted to go there and see where they filmed all those John Ford westerns. I think they also filmed Thelma and Louise up there and stuff. So I've been... looking for an excuse to go up there, but I could not persuade my mom to drive that much further up there. So, but it was cool. It was a cool trip.
That's funny.
So anyway, we're about an hour and 3.
So let's think. Spider-Man's actually only like 2 or 3 weeks away.
Isn't that unbelievable?
Yeah.
See, what's funny is I'm not seeing the ads because I don't have the TV. So I was surprised the other day today they were mentioning it was having some premiere in Hong Kong or China or Japan. And I'm going, what? Because I was thinking of it as some big summer thing from 2 months from now. But wow, it's like right around the corner.
The other thing we forgot to talk about, OS 10, the next OS 10 delayed to October.
Wow, I wonder what's up with that.
And the first thing to note is that, A, Matt was wrong with his prediction like a month ago.
Of what?
That it would be out on March 28th. That I stated with firm certainty.
See, I worry about the Mac lately. I worry about these announcements. And
I will say, my source was mostly right about what happened on March 28th was that Adobe announced CS3 officially, which is their whole Photoshop suite and everything related to
it. That was even weird, too, because they announced it fully, but then they said, oh, and it's for sale, but two of the components we're going to release in the middle of summer, and that struck me as Adobe-like as well. I was surprised on
that. So that's what actually happened on that date. My source had ended up seeing some cross-branded promotional stuff and had somehow assumed that it was being, based on what she saw, that it was going to be launched at the same time. So that's, I apologize for a bad rumor.
But have you read, like, a lot of these OS X rumors, they're, for the most part, pretty underwhelming of the stuff they've seen come down the pike.
See, I'm reading stuff that seems like, well, actually, well,
one
of the rumors I saw was, well, there's a lot of big stuff that they haven't told you about yet.
Yeah.
And that you'll probably see at Worldwide Developers Conference in June, which is when I thought it was going to be released, June 11th.
Yep.
You know, I keep hearing about that there's going to be a BitTorrent client that, you know, is built into iTunes or something, which they've got to do something because, as we've said many times in the past, there's no...
Yeah, but if they do that, don't you think they'll also make it for the PC?
I don't know.
If it's built into iTunes?
I don't know, but the lack of HD content is...
That would be so great for me. And did you notice it took hackers like all of 5 minutes to break the Apple TV and be able to show that, yes, it can play 5.1 surround.
I saw that there was a hack for that, but I couldn't actually learn what it was.
The minute they said that they could do it, I just couldn't figure out, well, why are they not? I don't understand why they wouldn't release that.
It would be a licensing issue. If it's not a hardware problem, then it's got to be like a licensing issue.
It's like
issue.
Adobe licensing thing or something.
Well, it wouldn't be Adobe. Whoever.
I mean, not Dolby. I'm sorry.
Doubly. I'm sorry. I shouldn't. That was such an obvious joke to make. I'm embarrassed I made it.
I'll play this in doubly. Well, that's...
God. So, yeah.
It's so much better in doubly. I think it would be wonderful in doubly.
So I know that there are hacks out there. I need to look at them and see how involved they are, because I have zero problem using easy hacks. Like, okay, double-click the app, and it runs. As soon as if I have to crack anything open or do a chip or flip a jumper, I'm not doing it.
I agree. I'm not doing it at all. Like the one they were talking about. Okay, we figure out this down and easy hack so you can play all this other Windows media files and all this other content. Great. Okay, so the first thing, and then they go through this list, and I realize, and it's very specific, and I have no interest because it's too much, like I'm going to screw something up.
Yeah, and I'm still not, even with that, though, the fact that Leopard, the next OS, is now delayed means I will most likely not get my laptop, a new laptop, before that.
Yeah.
There's another rumor that the MacBook Pros will be a new revision will be released after NAB, which is this week, National Association of Broadcasters.
I was this close to my strongly considered part to getting a new laptop this week, and I strongly considered getting a Mac.
Get a MacBook Pro.
I had no option, though, at the time, and I strongly considered because I could run Windows and the other on it, but then I realized that, which is a good thing, that my existing laptop was, in fact, still under my extended warranty, so they were able to replace my broken screen on it.
So I have no... If they do a revision soon, I'll consider it. I've kind of been waiting for the OS because I really just want it pre-installed. I don't even want to have to... Even though Apple makes it super easy to install an OS on a pre-existing computer, I just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah.
Plus, it's money. Like I've said, it's going to be at least $3,000 to get the setup I want.
Damn.
And, you know, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, going house hunting...
And, well, I'm not going to ask you. I've never been broker than I am in the last few years. All of a sudden, it's like I am like literally like pulling out my change jar to get gas. I'm like it's just like this plethora of bills, and then going on that vacation. It'll be a while before I do any of those.
Yeah. So suddenly I'm like, oh, do I really need? you know, I want a new computer. I don't really need one for what I'm doing, but it's got, it doesn't even have Airport Extreme. It's got like 802.11b.
Really? B?
Or, yeah.
It's got to be G.
No, not G, B.
Oh, the one you have currently.
Because
oh,
the MacBook Pro I have, they didn't. Airport Extreme is a different airport card. I just have Airport Basic.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
So that's sucky, but I don't know. Okay, we're winding down. So it'll be really interesting to see what happens if the delay is due to, as they said, they had to pull resources from Leopard to the iPhone to get it launched in time to see, you know, what happens with that.
You heard what Dvorak said. He's such an idiot.
I mean, Dvorak has said a lot.
Well, in this, in relation to the iPhone, he's saying, what is he saying? Something about the effect that it's the worst thing going to be ever, and they need to scrap it before they release it. Something to that effect. It's your typical blanket bold statement.
You know, I used to think he was the biggest jackass, but hearing him on Twit.
I like
this week
him a
in
lot.
Tech. It's you know,
do you download Cranky Geeks?
I did one when
he
did Neil
Cranky
Gaiman.
Geeks. It's good. I enjoy Cranky Geeks.
No, it's, you know, I kind of see where he's coming from, even though I haven't seen this particular rant and don't know his reasoning, but I've heard him kind of kvetch about it before. You know,
see, I've been a Dvorak fan for the longest time because he used to have a Mac user column. A long time ago, back like in the
I remember
first
that.
Hit,
I remember
it was
that.
Called The Devil's Advocate. And he, in the back of that thing, would sit there and talk about how screwed up Macintosh was. And it was always funny. And at a certain point, Macintosh did start screwing up, and his articles started cutting, I think, too close to home, and then they stopped having him in the magazine. But I always enjoyed him. I always really enjoyed him.
Somebody,
you know, he lives right around here too. It's
no,
funny.
He has a vacation home in Port Angeles,
Port Townsend.
Port Townsend.
Yeah.
The as we keep going, we had talked a bit about the iPhone and the market penetration and what would be necessary. There was a recent poll data that said 25%, 1 in 4 teenagers would spend $500 to get the iPhone.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, and
well,
2,500 teenagers don't have
No. And they brought this up in Twit. I think it was Twit. It might have been MacBreak Weekly. I don't remember. And Leo Laporte says, well, was it $500 of their own money or $500 of dad's money?
Yeah, and you have to think about $500 plus the $1,000-whatever of coverage time for 2 years.
But if you think of, and Scott Bourne, who's the diehard iPhone advocate, saying, yeah, but it doesn't matter. As a gauge of interest, 25% of teenagers is a huge market. And initially, I would say, that's an insane amount of money for a teenager on a phone.
Yeah.
But as I look around and I see teenagers doing stupid stuff and the phones they have now, I can see it. I almost don't want to see it because I think that's such an incredible waste of resources when you're young. And does that mean that, A, you have money because your parents are spoiled and are spoiling you? Or you have a job and you don't want to save the money. You want to spend it on a phone.
Freaking phone. I mean, the average kid, you're talking, let's say they're making $10 an hour, which is which is a lot, but that's 50 hours. But, you know, with you know, everything, it's like 60 hours.
It's a stupid way to spend that much money.
For average teenagers, they have to work a month to buy that phone. And then to pay for the ongoing airtime, they're working like 5 hours a week minimum. It's like a lot.
So, it's bad from that perspective. And from the perspective of they are getting the money from their parents, that's bad too.
Yeah.
Because that's an incredible level of spoilage. And these are kids I want to get hit by cars.
I know. Well, I want all kids to get hit by cars. But in particular, these ones by big cars.
God. Anyway, so it'll be really interesting to see what happens.
Yeah.
All right.
So anyway, last thought, good, bad, Ed Norton as the Hulk. If it's true.
I will always give a weird acting choice the benefit of the doubt. Always, always, always. I would like to see that. I'm sad because I really enjoyed Eric Bana as the Hulk, and I would like to see him continue that. Clearly, the filmmakers who, up till now, I guess, haven't necessarily said he's not coming back. They've said we're clearly not using Ang Lee again.
Yeah.
We clearly want to go with Hulk Smash as the premise of the film.
See, I I disagreed with you on that. I thought I love Eric Bana. And
I love Eric Bana.
I did not like him in the Hulk. I thought he was just nothing because it was just him waiting around for him to get angry, and then computer generated thing.
I thought he did the internal.
See, I didn't. That's my feeling on it. But I'm looking at Ed Norton going, now, admittedly, it's going to be a big, you know, big Hollywood picture, but I'd love to see him take a stab at it. I love Ed Norton.
Right.
I think he's a great actor.
So do I.
So if this is true and that works out well, I'm excited. And if not, I feel bad because clearly he doesn't want to do these kinds of pictures. But if he does, he clearly wants him to be good. And let's hope it is good.
This is a rumor that you emailed me about today, and I
but I've seen two other people talk about it.
I'm not saying it's not a rumor.
Yeah.
I suspect it's a rumor only because you said it was that the director being discussed to direct the next Hulk film was the guy who did the Transporter.
Yeah, but
films.
I read about it in it was like literally After Effect. I read about it in Wells or somebody else where it seemed less of a rumor, more of a reality.
I have such a hard time believing Ed Norton would want to work with a director who did
Transporter 1 and 2.
Not that those films were bad, but that's just 180 degrees from Ed Norton.
Yeah, I agree. Anyway, we should wrap it up.
We're done. You guys rock at mustardayonnaise.com is how you reach us for questions, comments, and I guess a concern if you had it. I'm Matt.
I am Richard.
Thanks for listening.
Adios, conscious.